The Bonnie Gagne, everyone. This is Professor Amin Ra, Professor Emeritus, California State University of Long Beach, Africana Studies. We want to welcome you here to the Conscious Corner, a Zoom cast that speaks nothing but facts about Black. And you're in the right place. If you're looking for the truth, you found the truth, you're in the right place. And we're going to discuss some critical issues that we face as a people and get some feedback from our panel. As I said, you have Brother Ijao for his organization and his work with young people and mentoring them and developing them, and his longtime activist at Cal State Long Beach, student activist leader, BSU leader, fraternity leader, as well as just a strong brother in the community that works with young people and works tirelessly for the liberation of our people. And we have Mr. Ernest McBride, who's a historian, an archivist for his father, Ernest McBride Sr., who helped start the first NAACP at City of Long Beach, as well as the Optima Club. But he's responsible for the political consciousness of many of the people around him. They've named schools and recreation centers after his father. But Ernest, in his own right, has blazed the trail with regards to his multiple experiences from the service, being in the service, and at the same time playing sports in Long Beach City, and longtime resident of Long Beach. So he's there to bear witness to his growth and witnesses the first Black accomplishments from the first Black mayor, Jim Wilson, and all the strong churches in Long Beach that were active. And we have Brother Ijao, straight out of Detroit, Motor City. I'm not
Ahi.
Ahi, straight out of Detroit.
Ahi.
Yeah, Ahi, straight out of Detroit. Strong activist. He has one of his relatives on last week, a psychologist. And he's just a beautiful brother that constantly studies and keep up with what's going on in the world and have the wealth of knowledge and experience in the movement. We have Brother Rashiki, who is responsible for this platform, who provides us this platform, Community Education Network, to be able to present information to our community. As a Long Beach State alumni, as well as a longtime teacher for Compton Unified School District, and an activist in his own right with regards to providing this program as a contribution to the liberation of our people. And as he constantly said, don't let the oppressor be your teacher or tutor. So we're going to keep on pushing this evening and discuss some critical issues that we think should be on the forefront of what's going on in the community and what issues that we think. We're going to have what we call a conversational platform this night, where people speak their mind about what they think are the critical issues and the contradiction that we see of this so-called, what is this, America, or the United Snakes of America. All right, Brother Ahi, you had started and you were talking about the contradiction of this system with regards to the NFL celebrating a moment of silence or recognizing this Charlie Kerr, who was assassinated. And I wanted to get your position on that and tell me more what you saw and how you think that affect people with regards to how they are treating him, making him a martyr, making him a symbol of white power and white supremacy. Go ahead, Adi.
Well, I think as of right now, you can't even criticize this guy. You'll lose your job. I think I heard someone was talking at work today, and I hate to put, it hasn't been validated, but I'm going to put it out there anyway, that this woman lost not only her job, but her license to nurse in Texas. But It hasn't been validated. It's just a talk on the job. But I do know that people have lost their jobs for talking about this guy, even repeating his rhetoric. People have been persecuted for that, repeating his rhetoric, trying to make him into something or change the whole narrative around this guy. But it's just disappointing. We were talking a little earlier that all but about four or five NFL teams would dare to give this guy a moment of silence. They would lower the flag for his assassination, but not even pay any attention to the last mass shooting we have. I mean, they're becoming so common that we're not even, and they're babies, but it's becoming so common that it's not shocking anymore. It's just part of the norm here in America, which is a shame. It's the only place on the planet that this happens, and no action is taken to correct it. But I think it's the consistent, Professor, you were saying earlier, it's consistent. They're consistent with their message and with their actions. So this is really that you as you said, there's no bottom. I was just like saying, how low can you go? But as you forestated, there is no bottom, considering their history. And their history is much worse than what they were doing right now. But they're consistent.
Yeah, we're gonna get back to that because all the Native Americans that they killed and imprisoned and indoctrinated and took their land, that's one genocide. Then holding us enslaved. All the things they did to us in the Holocaust or to our ancestors in the Holocaust of enslavement. I mean, you can't, and they can go lower than that, dropping the bomb on Hiroshima and Nagasaki, you understand, dropping the bomb in Vietnam or fire bombs and napalm. So, that's what they did to Iraq, weapons of mass destruction, what they, so, they got a history of being at the bottom when it comes to humanity. Brother Jai, what's your position on this assassination? Hey,
Can you
Jai?
hear me?
No,
Yes,
we
sir. Can you hear me?
yeah, we can
Yeah, you got to excuse me. I got a bad signal over where I live. It comes down to this. Yeah, Professor Ra. Racism is alive and well in this country, and it always has been, brother. And that's one thing that I learned. You know that we have to always continue to fight for our liberation and freedom on every front or every level that we're in, even on our jobs or even in our communities. We have to continue to be about that struggle for independence and self-determination. And we have to educate, not only liberation, self-determination, but education. And because so many of our people are just lost and confused and caught up. And that's why I stay in the pulse of all of the organizations I've been a part of, because it's important that our people never forget. One thing, I still fight, struggle with our people, because they still want to have picnics and they don't even understand. And when I explain to them the whole history of the dynamics of the picnic, you look at this brother that was hung out here. That's what they was doing to our people, brother. And then sitting around celebrating it by eating watermelon and eating chicken and all of that. So we still have to continue to fight. It's a struggle. And I've been in this struggle for over 40 years as a young man, since I was 18, came to college, and the struggle still continues. And I'm even I work within the public school system, and still, we still got our fight on our hands because our young people don't have any sense of guidance or direction, and they have no desire. So many of them, I can't say all of them, but so many of them don't want to know the truth. Man, I tell you, I walk around, man, these camps. I was at Pauley High School yesterday, and I see two Asian boys walking out saying, "What's up, my nigga? What's up, my nigga?" Nigga. So just the whole 9 yards. It's just a struggle. The struggle still continue, Professor Wrong.
Yeah, but
Thank you,
what's
brother.
on this assassination?
Well, brother, I mean, well, I didn't know that much about this racist devil. But I see that, you know, it's just a reflection of that president is so many people, so many lost folks elected. And that's what he stands for. He stands for Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk is just a representation of who Trump is in office, Agent Orange. So, I mean, that's just the state of America. I know right there in Huntington Beach, they was having a big celebration, celebrating the life for this dead cracker. So, you know, all I know is the struggle continue, brother. That's all I know. It's just another phase of it, brother. And we've been dealing with it for over and over since our existence, brother. And we have to continue to be about fighting for self-determination and liberation of our people. That's my spin on it. So he's just another aspect of it, brother. It's, you know, so.
Hear, hear, black man. Hear, hear.
Brother Hood, you up at the high schools and you up into AI, and I know you be looking at the information. What's your position on this young man getting assassinated?
Oh man, greetings. Greetings, everybody. Well, for me,
Greetings,
man,
man.
it's like more of the same. It's like a movie that you know how it's going to end, going over, playing over and over again. But from what I've seen about it, it seems like it's like an infighting between the MAGA. That's what I got out of it.
When you
I don't
say
have any, like, it seemed like it's more like seemed like it's like infighting between the MAGA. To me, that's what I think. You know,
what do you mean
how
by
so?
infighting, because I think they're both, I mean, part of that, right? I mean, that's what, I mean, I don't know much about this, the Kirk, Charlie Kirk. I don't really follow it too much as far as his political stuff. I know that he's a Trump guy. So just looking at it, it looks like it's probably, you know, something, you know, between MAGA. That's what it seems like to me.
Well, the guy that shot him, his family was very conservative, and they were Trumpers. And but he was engaged with another dude that was going through a transition to be a woman, and so they tried to say
Oh,
he,
so it's one of them kind of deals.
they were. I mean, so they tried to say he wasn't conservative, but he was conservative. He was just into that part because there's a lot of
He was being
conservatives.
honest about his homosexuality. The rest
Right.
of us
So it
are
was
not
causing a
honest about
split. So it's causing a
it.
split within their own MAGA party, it seems like to me. That's
But
what it is.
they tried to switch him up and say he was liberal, but
No, he
he
wasn't. He
gave
wasn't.
Republicans and conservatives.
Right. Right.
Yeah, from that standpoint.
That's
But
kind
what
of how I
about,
look at it.
Rashid Key, what's your position?
What did Malcolm say?
What?
You remember what Malcolm said?
Talking about chickens?
Chicken came home to roost. That's all I got to say.
Yes, sir.
You got Ernest, Larry Fields, and Brother Uwaeze is here.
Okay, then. Ernest has stepped away. What about Ways Crazy?
He
You
weighs it. He weighs it.
Uwaeze, how you doing, brother? Uwaeze, is he talking? What about the other person?
That's Larry Fields. Here
Okay, can you hear me?
come Dr. Muhammad. He's coming in.
Hello?
Yeah. Is that the Panther? Yeah.
Brother Raw?
Yeah.
How you doing? This is Uwaeze.
Hey, Uwaeze, how you doing, man? How's your mom? How's everybody?
Oh, we are blessed. Everybody is doing all right. We hanging on in there.
And from a deep spiritual position, what do you feel about the assassination
From a
of
deep,
man?
and what's going on, Hood and everybody else, Russell Key, Moscone.
You got it.
All right.
What's up,
You know, I don't really have I didn't really reflect on it too much.
bro?
You know, I'm kind of indifferent to the situation. I didn't really know who he was until, you know, I start seeing him all over the news. And then I looked at a couple of YouTube videos to see, you know, who is this guy that they talking about just got assassinated. And So I listened to a couple of his views. He seemed like he was racist at times. The remarks that I heard that he, him make with regard to black people, he seemed to have like a real condescending type of approach that they weren't, they don't have no responsibility for any of the things that he's pointing the finger at us for. And he made a couple of points about that, within the black community, you have a lot of households without a father, and that we need to, black people need to take responsibility to say, enough is enough, and so on and so forth. And I couldn't really argue with that. But also said, but what is the responsibility of the white power structure that contributed to this situation? That's how I was kind of looking at it. I said, wow, he ain't having, did are you saying something?
No, I was just saying you were correct. You asked the right question. Why is there not that many fathers at the house? What have you done? Because in the 40s and the 30s, black men were in the house. What changed?
Exactly.
And up to the 60s.
Right. What was the disrupting, factors that contributes to, some of the things that he's pointing the finger at us at? But beyond that, I'm kind of just looking at it like you never know what this system is up to. It could have been an inside job. Just like, I think 9/11 was an inside job. A whole bunch of things is just like you just can't put it past them. I think Farrakhan said one time that you can't fathom the depths of the mind of Satan. And so it's like you just can't put it past the system to take out one of their own so that they could use that for whatever agenda that they have. I don't know if they want to, create a race war. Trump is trying to put troops in black communities. I think he's trying to put some troops in Chicago, and he wants to send troops in down in Atlanta. Was it Memphis or?
Memphis.
Okay, yeah,
So,
down in
Brother
Memphis.
Wayne, I don't
Yes.
mean to interrupt you, but that's a perfect segue into Dr. Muhammad, which he
Oh,
has
wait,
very.
Roger, I just wanted to get some feedback from Mr. Fields, Attorney Fields,
Okay.
and then we go to the Panther.
Okay.
Attorney Fields?
Good evening, everyone. Good evening. I am indifferent to I guess the killing of this guy. I mean, I don't know how it rose to the definition. I guess the definition of assassination is a political killing, but I don't know if it even rises to that. I don't want to be as crass as Chris Rock when he, stated that a couple of guys that we have assumed were assassinated just got shot. But I mean, I mean, this is, I am somewhat, I'm not even somewhat, I am very much unable to even process it because the Sunday before this incident occurred, DeMonte Johnson, which is the gentleman that was with Mike Brown when he was murdered by the police. He was killed. And so now everyone associated with the protest in Ferguson, Missouri, has just about been killed. All of these youngsters, it's statistically impossible for this to occur on its own. So I can't process this guy because I, as they say on the flight, I'm trying to put my own seatbelt on. And I'm trying. And I'm trying to get my own oxygen. So, I mean, it's I have to be, and I'm indifferent to it because the fact of the matter is We are, you know, we're, these people have waged war against us. But what is of note, the pattern that is of note is just like the Nazis before they started the World War had a flashpoint, and instead of going after the individuals that burned down the parliamentary, they did a U-turn and came after the Jews, just as occurred in 9/11. The Saudis that were on those planes were the supposedly the executors of that tragedy. They didn't go to Saudi Arabia; they went to Iraq. This incident here, you have an individual that is everything but a member of our community, but you're coming after our community. Why are your nationalists calling HBCUs, threatening them? Why do we have two suspect lynchings? And you know, in this time, why are you as a white nationalist party claiming that there's something from the left that has been the problem with this? So, I mean, those are the things that I get out of this at this point. But I, you know, I had no knowledge of this, no real knowledge of this guy, a passing knowledge of it. And I mean, I don't have the bandwidth to give him any attention because I'm processing and trying to make sense out of what's going on in my own front yard.
All right, good. Okay, Rashid, do you want Brother Muhammad to come on now?
Yeah. Dr. Muhammad.
Greetings, greetings. Good evening, everyone. Definitely, very, very serious times we're in right now. I'm in Chicago, by the way, and I had a very turbulent day. I'm not going to discuss it on here, but I will say this, there's an element of law enforcement in Chicago that have their own subculture. They have their own, I mean, of course, we know they do that throughout the country, but it's like the internal gangs within their structures on a whole different level. And I will say that, the mayor of Chicago issued an executive order that the Chicago police cannot work with ICE, any federal agents that Trump sent, or the guard. And then the governor issued, extensive things. So it's like, in that juncture, a lot of them are very upset that they cannot have this extra, MAGA dynamic. And they've been doing a lot. And I just will say that, of course, it's going to affect those of us who are in the community and those of us who are always going to be targets to them, because of what we do and who we are. So one way or another, they exacerbate the targeting of us. And I just say, just some different things happen within the day I'm not going to discuss right now, but I'm good, and just
Brother
deep.
Muhammad, introduce yourself, tell me your affiliations with the Panthers, and what your theme talk is today.
Yeah, I will. But I was just basically prior even to get into that, just letting it be known that some personal things took place today within the city. And with myself, and just this element of things that they have that's deeper than a lot of us sometimes may know. But getting to the other dynamic, for those who may know, for those who don't, I'm Dr. Lee Muhammad, MD. I'm the national leader of the Revolutionary Black Panther Party. And occupationally, I am a psychologist. I specialize in trauma, PTSD, with a back extensive background in child psychology, family, couples, and relationship. But primarily today, I work with trauma, PTSD. The next thing is, I'm also the first vice president and the People's Central Council chairman for the PGRNA, Republic of New Africa. Tonight's conversation and discussion, from what I've been hearing, since I have been on, and again, my tardiness has something to do with some personal things. I almost really didn't make it, but But I'm here and committed. Dealing with Charlie Kirk and this exacerbation of racism and fascism and potential exacerbation of roundup of our people and different targeting. It's a very serious thing. As far as the Charlie Kirk thing, this is a person who really, for the most part, articulates, that whole MAGA ideology. He's a person who really, for the most part, makes it palatable. He goes to college camp like a predator. He preys on a certain element of the population, and they send him out there. One thing about MAGA that many may know, many may not know, is that it's one of the most dangerous developments of racism and white supremacy in history. And some of the major dynamics of that is because of what elements have gotten together to make that possible. You have the all the elements of the white extremist groups, the anti-woman clique, the anti-government clique, the anti-immigrant clique, the conspiracy theories clique like QAnon and the rest of them, and just all of them together, neo-Nazis, all of it combined. But then you also have the element in law enforcement, the Back the Blue, the Blue Lives Matter, the Skull Crushers, and like in this city, they have the tradition of the Slick Boys, they call them, a whole different type of element. And then you have, which is Chicago, and then you have the other elements of the criminal element. Trump released 1,500 Gen 6 rioters, and you combine them together with this final element that used to be hard for them to have peace with, and that's the oligarch, and at least consciously and knowingly, the oligarch class, the Bezos, the Zuckerbergs, and the Musk, and now they all friendly together. They hadn't had that much cohesion since the days of when they got upset during Reconstruction. That they're in a whole different thing right now, and that's what makes MAGA look different. And Trump is just a mascot. He's not that bright, but he's a good crash out because he has a history of destroying anything that he even tried to build himself. He never had a business company or item that he's developed that's been successful. And anything they give to him, he write an executive order off on it. So it's like you need a crash out like that. I mean, for what they got going on. But someone like Vance and Kirk is the next generation. And these are the people you develop because they let Trump crash out, and then they become, a whole different element of that whole move. But as far as the Kirk thing, as I was hearing, the brother said, he was paraphrasing Chris Rock, about, people just getting shot and there not being the assassinations. As somebody who's versed and who's trained, very, when it comes to firearms, combative training, just knowing the different dynamics, especially how snipers move and operate as well. Snipers usually come in pairs. It's a lot of people I know, I'm just being 100, that can shoot at 200 yards. I mean, as long as they train regular, that ain't even have no military training, no combative training. I just know people who train regular that can do that. However, the precision on that shot was like art if you're a shooter. He got struck right in the carotid artery. I mean, it was like art, almost looked like AI. It was so much precision with that. And that wasn't happenstance. It looked like that. And so the point I want to make with that is it definitely was something that's far beyond that Tyler Robinson dude, in my opinion. I do know that, like the brother was mentioning earlier, that it could be something from the inside. I don't put it past him. We know that on 9/11 they had several actual simulations going on. I think one of them was called Amalgam Freedom or something like that. And they had these different scenarios of planes getting hijacked, going into buildings that they, and some of them they annually did on September 11th. So the point is that the whole thing, we know how that was. They start talking about it's a war on terror going after international terrorists. And then they created the Patriot Act and created DHS for the first time. And once they did that, all they did was reestablish the elements of COINTELPRO. And my eldest, Panther eldest, brother Baba John Ballman, he talked about how the same COINTELPRO agents that tortured him in the 70s, I mean, sexually abused him even, that these same exact agents knocked on his door as DHS agents at 9/11 and saying they got unfinished business from the 70s. So they went after Panther. They rose, they put this so-called reward on Assata's head and all type of stuff they did. They and then not only that, then they targeted seven brothers in Miami called Liberty City Seven and said that, they were somehow connected to Al-Qaeda. Then they said, nah, their defense attorney kicked that, got that kicked out. They say, well, they're not. However, they're terrorists or they're domestic then, and they're not operational, but they're aspirational. So they got convicted on an aspiration. And what that did was set a precedent, like you can't even aspire or to think, like a thought arrest. And but that was to set a precedent. And they kind of did a lot of funny things with that. And that's why we have to look at everything the way that we do. I know in our community, we got a lot of division going on. We got, and I some may get offended with me, and we could debate or argue that if they want to, but you got this cult going on. First and foremost, Black people of America, we have a very unique culture. It's true. We have various lineages and various definitions for our lineage and various definitions that we've had for our act, to delineate ourselves. But I'm gonna just say it, and I don't. I mean, if it offends people, it offends them. But that whole FBA thing is a cult and a movement. That's not a lineage or a delineation. It's something somebody put out there, and it's like MAGA and blackface, and it's very divisive, and it has us say, "Oh, this ain't our fight." Not understanding that everything they're doing is our fight. When you see these people come ahead and they talk about they're going after people, and everybody's desensitized to it. They say, "We're going after Trinidad Robert. We're going after the criminals. We're gonna get them." And then they go after them. Then you see them after. They're not going after no so-called gangsters or the criminals. They say they go and they target elderly people. They target people on the hospital bed. They target children in elementary schools and just people driving in traffic. And they just had this ruling a couple of days ago where it says that they could target you now for your skin color and how you speak. That's what they just put out now, that they can legally do that, right? So here's the point. Now, when it started hitting home, where we start getting some realization is what they did in DC. They just made it clear they were going after Black people. And not only that, the criminals, they say, well, we're gonna fall for a lie twice. And they've always done that to us. Nixon, with the so-called war on drugs, and they admitted later, John Ehrlichman, it was really a war against us, a proxy war, using drugs as the premise so they could so they dumped it in our community, socially engineered the dynamic of the sale and the usage. And then it became known as now a crime war. Reagan overemphasized it, and then Clinton brought it home. And so now we got Trump with the tough on crime thing. It's just Nixon 2.0, and not to be everywhere or to carry this thing in any kind of how would I say, a non-connected direction. The point is that it's everything about us. We must never forget the King Alpha plan. By the basis of Louis Giafrida, who headed FEMIN under Reagan, he created his thesis about that, talking about the rounding up of 22 million Negroes, he's Black people at that time, he said, and really becoming the real King Alpha plan or Operation Godplot Plan 2502, the McCarran Detention Act. All of these things, they've always been aimed at rounding us up, detaining us, wanting to exterminate us and control population stabilization. But not only that, in 1922, the state of Mississippi voted to deport all Black people out of America. So it has happened. And we just have to understand the connection. It was in Rex 84, that's when Latino and Hispanics got added to the King Alpha plan under Rex 84. We got to know that this stuff really exists. And all this MAGA movement is the final icing on the cake. They're sick of us. They're frustrated, and they don't want us around anymore. All of those things, like the brother said earlier, listening to Charlie Kirk talk about us, he takes things and he was nothing but a liar and has pseudo information. Everything contradictory. I remember he was asked about I think what it was, violent crime. I'm trying to think about this question. That was a very easy question to ask, but it's also how manipulative he was. But the point is that when we talk about crime and violent crime, you know, we have to understand the Hegelian dialectics that they use on us, which is what? Where you have problem, reaction, solution, you know, theory, where they created the problem. People react either engaging in the problem or are frustrated and want the problem gone. Then they come in like they have the solution. That's what it goes in our community. A lot of our people say, man, I want these young, something need to be done with these YNs. You know, I'm tired of them out here shooting and killing all of this and all of that. And then, yeah, bring the police, bring the guard in. And the thing about it is that what's going on, it's been socially engineered so that they could come in. And a lot of that, believe it or not, in this city of Chicago, you have a split on the on black civilians in the community, where some actually for real wanting to bring in some troops and some guard. And then others have more sense. And I will say this, is those of us who work in the city, as myself, we work with the street tribes, vice lords, myself, vice lords, I mean, speaking for myself, I work with vice lords, GDs, Stones, Mickey Cobras, KTS, all of these different groups. And we have coalitions set up where we work on crime prevention and where we work on, you know, getting the, you know, the process in order. It doesn't mean it's perfect because any city can have shootings and killings, but there is work being done where it's not like something that's not. And Chicago's not number one for violent crime. Chicago Newsweek said number 25. And even FBI statistics themselves said out of 326 cities, Chicago ranked 116th, not 10, not 19, not 20, 116. But the question we have to ask is, why are they targeting Chicago? And I just say this. They have model cities or template cities that certain things must continue in the city so that they're able to target it the way that they need to. And that's why Chicago's always been their target. But, you know, Trump called himself, you know, saying that he was going to wage an apocalypse on Chicago and we were going to find out what him changing the name of Department of Defense, the Department of War means. And not too long after, one of the chief agitators they have for MAGA, one of his chief, his friend, you know, gets, you know, shot and killed. And he didn't just get shot and killed. He had our name in his mouth when they killed him. They was asking him about mass shootings and all of that. And he started talking about, you know, when they, those dog whistles, the gangs, you know, that's another N word. There's a lot of words they use that's another word for us. But that's what that was. So my whole take on that is the fact that this dude, yeah, was a rabid racist, very dangerous person, enabled a lot of people to say, you know, have sympathy because his children saw him die and all these other different things. But what about the various people who had children and they died, like George Floyd? He disrespected the death of George Floyd, said he was a drug addict. He disrespected Breonna Taylor, said she was a thug and her boyfriend was a thug and they deserved to die. He disrespected Trayvon Martin and said he was a thug and he deserved to be killed and die. So it's like, you know, how do you have empathy or sympathy for a person who dehumanized you? And then say, it's just words, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like words don't kill. Words kill. Because I asked the question, why do people hate Hitler? He never fired a gunshot. He never pulled a lever. He never, you know, put no pellets in them gas chambers. He just used his words. And yeah, words do kill. And so the rhetoric of Charlie Kirk is responsible for George Floyd, because his rhetoric was before that. Responsible for Breonna Taylor, whom he also dissed after they died. And responsible for Tamir Rice. And mainly the countless other deaths that we have. That rhetoric dehumanizes people and propagandizes their condition. And yeah, whatever happened to him, as Malcolm would say, you know, the chickens came home to roost. And that's just what it is, you know, as far as that's concerned. And that's about a good amount of what I wanted to express, you know, situationally about, you know, what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that's good. That's good. Well, whew, boy, appreciate what everybody said, if I understand correctly. Ernest, you have any comments on this assassination?
Saying
You
really,
have any?
because for a while I kind of felt bad for his two kids, but I say, hey, he might have been bringing them up the way he is, so I don't feel nothing for the guy. Like brother just saying, yeah, I knew the problem was bad. You know what's happening, but I didn't know it was that bad. You know, as bad as what you're saying tonight about all these different factions and stuff. Because me and my dad used to argue. We didn't have an argument, but we just make bets. Because even when I was a kid, he would tell me, "Well, when you get grown, you're gonna be doing. You know, this fight is still gonna be going on." And I told him, well, I think if we do make strides, you know, for the race, I'm sure it's going to be a black man from the South, not from the North, because they even got a different perspective on whites than we do, you know, growing up here, like in California. So he, you know, I see the, like you're saying about the struggle, you know, because I walked picket lines with my dad when I was 7 and 8 years old, and like you say, the struggle is still here, alive and well. So that's about all I had to say, you know. But I don't
Well, it
feel
took a
Kurt, you know, because he running. I guess he, like you say, like Malcolm said, the chickens came home to.
okay, but you know, we all know that it took us 100 years to get out of the Holocaust from slavery. So, you know, I mean, it takes a long time to get the pressure off of you because he specializes in domination, deprivation, and a degradation of people, you know, and he studies psychological, spiritual, and physical war, and he implements all his plans. He abuses everything that he touches for the purposes of furthering his power. He exploits everything that he touches. But getting back to this assassination, this was a very, very influential young man. Brother Kerr. He had 800 chapters of his organization, Truth Something, throughout the college campuses. And when he came to
But
college,
I heard Trump say 3,000, but go ahead.
no, it was 800
I
chapters.
don't hear. Okay.
It may be 3,000 members, but 800 chapters. He spoke at the Trump inauguration he was very instrumental in getting Vance to be a part of the Trump administration after Vance had called Trump or Hitler. And he drew crowds. He drew crowds, young people, registering them to vote and registering them to take his ideological position and would debate anybody. You know, he challenged, when he went to speak, he challenged anybody to come up and debate him about on his position. He was in college, he dropped out, and his wife was worse than him. He said that on in an interview. He said, "Look, I'm conservative, but she's out conservative, and she's violent his organization going." It comes down to the assassination. From a moral standpoint, we being the moral vanguard of the world, from the standpoint of ethics and value, from ancient history all the way up to today, we're against indiscriminate assassinations and killing of civilians and things of this nature. I mean, you don't want to be like the oppressor and just go out and just kill people. Don't like them or they said something you didn't like. That's what they do. I'm not saying that there ain't some African American that have taken to the gun. With the brother Howard Johnson in the 70s in New Orleans or Mississippi, he started sniping them. You had the DC sniper, you had Durden, the police officer. There's been you had the soldiers in Oklahoma, where Black Wall Street, they came to defend the people, but they were overwhelmed. We had the Deacons for Defense. We had the Panther Party. That was Black Panthers for defense of the community. But getting back to Brother Muhammad, because he's our guest tonight. Brother Muhammad, tell us about your organization and tell us about your goals and objectives and what is your creed or what are you trying to do in Chicago or nationwide as a national leader?
Yes, definitely. With the Revolutionary Black Panther Party, we are considered, also internally considered, that the continuity. So as the same party in the 1960s just updated today to deal with today's struggle, besides the 10-point platform of which we still stand on, and even as it was reconstructed in the 1970s by Barbara Dr. Huey P. Newton, rest in peace, rest in power, we also have what I developed as the five principles. And those five principles are, which is our overall mission, ideology, and philosophy, is to feed, clothe, shelter, train, and defend the people, which I also coined as law and collectivism. And in that juncture, so that the people are self-sufficient, able to feed, clothe, shelter, train, defend self. Now, some have argued throughout our sojourn in the movement when it comes to political education and revolutionary politics that those are survival things, and not and it's a deep dynamic, because the point is that you can't have a revolution or war if you can't eat, ain't got no food, clothes, or shelter, or training, or the ability to protect yourself. And so if we don't see this is our position. If we don't see someone starving to death, homeless, you know, don't have no clothes or nothing to protect themselves from the winters or the summer, and uneducated, the same as killed physically, you know, shot down or lynched, then we have to reevaluate what we stand. So those have over 40 chapters nationwide, 15 international chapters. Our international headquarters is in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. We also have a chapter in the Netherlands, which helps us throughout Europe. And as far as the United States of America, we operate dually. While I'm living in Chicago, Illinois, so we have a what we call our actual Midwest regional headquarters, but we also have our Southern headquarters in Jackson, Mississippi. And a lot of times that work is in between from a national perspective. But that's pretty much, and we have our West Coast regional chapter headquarters, which is in Oakland, California. And that handles the West Coast for us. But getting back to the mission and purpose, feed, clothe, shelter, train, defend is what we stand on, with an ultimate end game of a nation of our own. And to summarize that, as I mentioned earlier, I am the first vice president of the Republic of New Africa and the People's Central Council chairman. And in that juncture, you know, the RNA and the Panther Party, we come out of the Malcolm X doctrine. And many may know, and some don't know, that in 1963, when Malcolm went to speak to the OAU, he also spoke to a subgroup of the OAU called the African Liberation Committee. And they were responsible for financing liberation and revolution struggles throughout the continent. And he asked them for financial and military support to carry out the revolution in America, which is an intricate time. It was in the 60s. That's when revolutions were being waged in Latin America, the Caribbean, to decolonize the people. And basically, they said he needed two things. He needed a united front and a military force. And ultimately, from that vantage point, we know what happened with organizing 500 people in Detroit that ultimately became the Republic of New Africa. And we also know what happened once Baba Kwame Ture, rest in peace, rest in power, came to California and also met with Baba Huey P. Newton and Baba Bobby Seale and basically they were in RAM at the time, which also came from Malcolm, was able to influence a dynamic of the Panther Party where we started in Lowndes County, Alabama, under Kwame Ture to secure the vote, but we proliferated in Oakland, California, to able to manage that in a whole different way. But I just say that we stand on the threshold of our legacy, and we're still standing for the freedom, liberation of the community and people, and for a scientific African communal, aka scientific socialist, you know, establishing scientific socialism. But we're also African-centered Marxist-Leninists. And so I guess that's how I can introduce that as far as the Revolutionary Black Panther Party. As myself, again, I'm a psychologist, and I specialize in trauma and PTSD personally. And I guess that's it.
Well, there's a... Do you work with Fred Hampton Jr.?
He's definitely a comrade and a brother. You know, he has his own thing. You know, he has the Cubs. And he does a lot of good things. We do, you know, at times, you know, exchange, you know, certain type of levels of, how would I say, you know, we all get work done. I'll just say that. But he's
okay. But, you know, Fred Hampton Jr., the son of Fred Hampton, who was assassinated.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, he's on the west side. I'm in South Side Chicago.
Or what about Malik Shabazz out of D.C., the new Black Panther Party?
Well, you know, there's a, when it comes to the different formations, as we say, in the RNA, you know, everybody has a place to do something. But the new Black Panther Party, you know, was started by Aaron Michaels in 1989. And, you know, just like anything that we have in the movement, you know, sometimes it splits. The actual Malik had actually stepped down in the NBPP, and when he did, it was controversy. Sister Crystal Muhammad was voted in, and then somehow he had Hashem come back in. It was just a bunch of different things that happened. My point is that they are comrades as well. You know, Sister Crystal Muhammad, who is actually a national chairman of the New Black Panther Party. You know, that's my soul sister. You know, like when I say soul, I mean like we're not blood and like same parent. But we're definitely very tight. That's my comrade.
What's your position on Trump was supposed to send troops to Chicago, but he changed it to Memphis. There were some demonstrations against it. What was the Revolutionary Black Panther Party position on police? I mean, the National Guard coming.
You mean coming to Chicago, right?
Yeah, he was, but he changed it.
No, he didn't change it. So a lot of this is the third time I heard it today, by the way, Baba. No, he didn't change it. What he did was this. He said that he was New York, Chicago, and Baltimore was on his list. He didn't change it. It's just the fact that you have to understand that Tennessee is a red state. It's a MAGA state. So it's easy for him to just roll up in there without opposition. The governor of Illinois put out certain mandates, and so did the mayor in Chicago, but he still says he's not playing. He sent, I'm going to say about, like, could it be about 600 ICE agents, because they all over the streets. And you do see tanks here and there, and then the element of MAGA that he has in Chicago PD is almost as if he gave them specific orders too, because there's certain things that they're doing. As far as what we're doing, we've definitely been mobilizing throughout the community. We have something coming up. It's actually going to be next weekend, and it's called Rise Up Chicago. So this will be going on Saturday, September 27th, the Revolutionary Panther Party, in conjunction with comrades of other groups and organizations. We'll be putting on Rise Up Chicago, which is our official response to his threats of, like he said, we're going to find out what war means, and his threats to send the troops in, because he didn't stop it. He just went to Memphis, but he didn't say he's not going to do it. We're still under that element of threat. Every day, local media talks about it, too, of when he potentially may be doing this thing. So he didn't stop it, but that's our position. We've been mobilizing already throughout the streets in the community. But as far as an official public
action that people can see. September 27, 2025, we'll be doing Rise Up Chicago, which is our response to that racism and fascism by Donald Trump.
Well, where is it going to be at? And, what day, what time?
We're going to be starting at around 1 p.m. As far as location right now, if anybody is interested, just know it's going to be in Chicago, Illinois. But the reason why I'm not going to publicly say exactly where it is at this moment is for logistic and reconnaissance reasons. So I'm not going to say that right this moment, but it will be given out in a couple of days, just not today. Go ahead.
You know, in Chicago, you have Minister Faircon that has a big Savior Day there, and he lives there in Chicago. Plus, he got other homes in Arizona and other places. And then you have Jesse Jackson, Operation Push, was based there, and Rainbow Coalition was based there. You have the Al Rookins, who used to be Blackstone. Range Blackstone, where they're based at. You have, and Martin Luther King said Chicago was one of the most dangerous places. He's more scared of Chicago than he was the South, he said. Chicago has always been a centerpiece of the great migration of Black people who left the South from New Orleans, Mississippi. Many of them went to Chicago. How do you see the movement in Chicago with all those fractions in there that had not really came together yet? You got a number of Black, Hakeem Mahadibuti and the Institute of Positive Education. You had, independent schools that have gone to charter now. How do you see the temperament and movement in Chicago as far as the ability to mobilize the people and educate the people? And what tools do you have to get to do that?
Well, very, very deep question, and I definitely appreciate the history that you did, put down. So I'm going to fully answer that, but I must cover a few things. So in this work, like I said, we have 40 chapters throughout the country. As far as a part of my primary background, I grew up mostly in the South, prior to being in the Midwest. And most of my family, during the Great Migration, a lot of my family did come here to the Midwest, to Chicago. A good majority went to New York too, though, and to Virginia. On that part of my family that went to Virginia, that's on the Freeman side. I'm getting to a point in answering your question. There's a different way that our people are throughout the country when it comes to mobilization. The way you mobilize our people in Florida, due to the different fragmentation that we have in Florida and the way that we operate, it's much different than you would in Mississippi. And I'm getting to answering Chicago by getting to this point. For example, when you try to mobilize our people in Mississippi, there's ways you'll find out that it definitely takes a lot of outside physical on the boots. Boots on the ground, because there's just a certain element a certain way that we are there. This is why Baba Shukwe Lumumba, rest in peace, rest in power, when he was mayor of Jackson, when different things that be done through, even through the RNA, as Jackson, being where, the National House, was, and also Malcolm X grassroots, et cetera, et cetera. And NAPO, getting to a point now, people always came from Detroit to work in Jackson, because there's a certain way Mississippi moves, right? Same thing with Louisiana. And I'm saying this because all these different cities and states I've worked in and just have dealt with certain type of ways we move. We move a little different. Arkansas is the same way. Getting to a point. So in dealing with the Midwest, Chicago, it's not just Chicago, it's Detroit, it's Flint, Gary, and Milwaukee, which is an hour away. And dealing with the Midwest, there's just a certain way that we do operate. Being that you mentioned the Great Migration, I'm just going to say this, and I'm able to answer the question from various positions, because there's various positions and various dynamics that we have in this city that
I've been fortunate enough to work with them, right? So I just say this. When our people did come through the Great Migration, we came up with a lot of hopes and expectations. And I'm just saying from a psychoanalysis of just how things are, today Chicago has a very deep, I'm just saying the problem, getting to the problem first, a very deep crab in a barrel, cutthroat, snake, backdoor dynamic that's different than a lot of other cities. And I will say that a lot of it has to do when we came up through the Great Migration, because we had high hopes and high expectations. But when all the factories got shut down and all the different things that Nixon's influence did, we resorted to, you know, different means to survive. As far as the elements that you mentioned, D.L. Rukin's, the Stones, you know, I have a liaison with the Stones. I have an actual affiliation with the Stones. Same thing with the Vice Lords. Same thing with the GDs and the BDs. And there's another group called KTS, which is like the toughest street, you know, tribe here in Chicago. And these are the youth and people I work with. They're also Panthers and KTS and Panthers and GDs. The GDs are one of the most prolific ones, because for some reason, being in Chicago and my work in Chicago, that's always been a very powerful force to be able to go do a lot of things that I do in the city. So Chicago is very political. All the groups that you mentioned, not just the NOI and the other groups you mentioned, but also the Morris Science Temple, you know, Noble Drew Ali started it here in Chicago. And as far as you mentioned, the minister, what saddens me with the nation is that the nation is not what it used to be in the streets here in Chicago. There's a time I come to Chicago and you see like, you know, like dozens and tons of dozens of FOI throughout the city. And it used to be very much so. What saddens me is not the mosque or the minister. I love the minister and I love the mosque. What saddens me is the people in Chicago. They have this disdain for the mosque, like the young people. They say all kind of stuff that in ignorance don't even know what they're talking about. And it's sad, you know. And so there's a detachment. Jesse Jackson name ain't no in Chicago anymore. People don't, you know, that element is gone. That's like, you know, a lot of people don't even know who he is, these younger people now. And I say in some ways that's unfortunate. I mean, there's a lot of value from what he did. Though he didn't start the Rainbow Coalition, Chairman Fred did start that. Chairman Fred Singer, rest in peace, rest in power. But he started his version, like you said, Rainbow Push. But not to get off topic and long-winded, how does that work? Well, as far as the street tribe element, like I mentioned, the Arukans that are the Stones, the Vice Lords, the GDs, the BDs, the Mickey Cobras, and KTS, that's who I work with in the streets. As far as the different political apparatus, there's always the connection and openness to working with everybody. But I will say that, you know, there's no difficulty in getting things done, regardless of the various things we have. I always have said this, that a true united front is us respecting who we are collectively and also as individuals. Just like the U.S. Armed Forces, they got the Navy, they got the Marines, they got the Army, they got the Air Force, and they all have their unique ethos. They all have their unique codes, their unique mission, purpose, what makes them unique and different. But when it comes all down to it, they still the U.S. Armed Forces. And I always seen all of us as the Black Armed Forces. Even if we don't use that title, that's how I see us. So as far as how we work together and what we do, everything has its uniqueness. Not everybody wants to be a part of the mosque, and that's okay. And not everybody wants to be a Panther, and that's okay too. But for those who want, and not everybody gonna be in the street with the gangsters, but the point is that there's an element in place for everybody, and it's about how we all can agree and be in cohesion, and that's getting done.
Okay. Well, we appreciate that, but we must have to get you back, brother, because we, you know, you got a wealth of knowledge, and we're going to get back. But does anyone else have any burning questions they want to ask Brother Muhammad? Brother Rashidi, you there?
Yes.
Any questions anybody want to ask him?
I do.
Go ahead, he.
Well, I just have, let me see, I have a couple of questions and a couple of statements concerning your opinion on so-called FBAs and your opinion on maybe only people in military suits can teach somebody to shoot as far as that
No, I didn't
young
say.
white man who assassinated him, assassinated the this devil. And there's something else that don't come to mind. But I'll just say, people like me and my forefathers and my ancestors need to be talked about. We created the wealth of this country, and understanding that yes, there's ignorance on both sides. I've traveled the world, and before I could even get the country out of my mouth, people are telling me they have their biases based on what they don't heard. And then we have people coming in here based on what they have heard through their media and passed around from ignorance about who and what we are. But there is a distinct difference between my story, my ancestors and forefathers, and there need to be a distinction between what my ancestors and forefathers and currently the most copied culture, hated, despised, but loved in the world, us. Out of 15% of the people here in America, we are the most copied. We created the wealth here. I don't care about the political reasons, what the name you want to call it, but our story must be told, and there has to be a distinction between those who created the wealth and those who chose to come here after the wealth was created. Okay, now, what was my other point? Oh, yes. I worked with these devils for the last 35 years. And when hunting season began, that first day, they not at work. They've already made preparations for them not being there. They're a gun culture. From babies being taught gun safety. I've been at the firing range and they got their babies in there. I've seen them still in the sling, hanging on their mama. They're a gun culture. And precision and all the rest of that is not a market that's cornered by a small group of people. Okay, there's something else, brother, you stated. Oh, in Germany, when the Germans turned their attention to the Jews, it was these variables you did not include. They controlled the banks. They controlled the interest rates. And Germany was broke because they were paying the rent and the rent was high. So the Jews are not, you know, much like what's happening here. Of course, they were influential with their politicians. Much like what's happening here. You can't tell the truth and not be called an anti-Semite. If you're in a basketball or anything having to do with entertainment, you want to continue to make that money, you're going to shut your mouth. And you're going to recant and apologize before the world. Even though I'm telling the truth, I apologize.
this country with the influence of Jews in our political system, and just count the number of senators that are Jews. It should be easy to understand why at least the Jews were one of the subjects of Hitler's, I'll just say hate, because that's the way it looked, the way he was trying to exterminate them. And I can't think of the other thing, but I just wanted to throw that in the conversation.
Mm-hmm. Very, very good statements and questions for me, and I'm definitely going to go through each one of them. Before I fully do, though, I want to ask you something, Baba Amin Ra. Do you consider yourself an African or an African American?
Well,
No, not
you. You talk about Amin Ra.
Oh, excuse me. I'm done.
Okay.
Well, my ethnicity is an African, from the standpoint of being in America, from an ancestral standpoint, and a origin of existence. That's where we came from, you know, the continent of Africa, or Kibalan, or Olympia, with all the different names that they have for the continent. Second, I'm a brother in struggle. You know, I'm like Malcolm. I'm not American. I'm not a Democrat. I'm not a Republican. I got sense enough to know it. So I'm really a nationalist, a culture, Black culture nationalist. That I followed Dr. Maulana Karanga and studied Taoist philosophy and practiced that. But from the standpoint of identity, I'm a Black man, but my ethnicity is African. The reason I'm a Black man is because that's the symbolism of the rallying call out the 60s for the Black Liberation Movement that had two phases to it, the civil rights and the Black power position. I work with all organizations. I work with Omario Padelli. I got pictures with him from the Republic of New Africa. I work with Michael Zinzin, Coalition Against Police Abuse. I work with the Black United Front. Matter of fact, I was the chair of the Black United Front of Los Angeles, an organizing committee voted by the people. I was voted along with some of Ernest's relatives to go to Chicago to the Black, Gary, Indiana, to the Black convention, political convention in 1972, which I attended. But I'm just saying that when it comes to identity, I realize there's a conflict, and I don't think, you know, I do not identify with America. Let me just say this. I live here. I work. I'm like an enemy behind. I'm behind enemy lines. But the point is that we don't look at it. We look at the positive that Black people are doing. Everybody's making a contribution.
Yes.
It's hard. We don't have the money or the military to force our people to unify like the white man. He makes his people. He pay them or he punish them if they don't go along with his philosophies or his thing. That's why they used to kill white men who married Black women and things of this nature. I call them nigger lovers and all of that. I mean, he had laws. He passed laws against miscegenation. You know, so that's a different. See, we can't compel our people. We don't, I mean, and same thing. We still send our kids to get educated and indoctrinated at public schools, not with the consciousness of just growing, learning skills and learning that the ability to matriculate and the raise struggle to be successful in operating in society as well as contribute to our liberation. But our kids go there naked because the homes have been destroyed by, you know, the parents don't take it their responsibility to educate their kids. Now, Ernest, his father was an educator. He talked to all the young people in the neighborhood about political consciousness and things of this nature. But when it comes down to most homes in the Black community, they don't see their homes as an educational center to prepare kids for the reality that they're going to face with as they leave the house. And so, but getting back to your answer, yeah, that's how I see myself. It's complicated, but it's multidimensional. But we're in a complex and multidimensional struggle.
Well, I definitely appreciate your answer, and I'm 100% in alignment with what you said, because that's how I identify myself as well, you know. So there's no contradiction, you know, when it comes to that. But I do see that right now there's a very serious issue at hand when it comes to this thing of identity and lineage. And I ask that because of what the brother Ahi, is that how you say your name, good brother? Is it Ahi?
Ahi.
What he has stated, and it was in reference to my comment on FBA, it is very true that people in the diaspora are unique in many different ways. The reason why I mentioned what I mentioned, it is because there's a serious division, and it looks like a psyop that's going on. And surrounding it is the argument of reparations with no real tangible explanation on how that would happen. But that's surrounding the argument. So the conversation is, yeah, they got to be a delineation, delineation and lineage, and we FBA, and Africans are tethers, and we're not going to identify with Africa and the tethers and the Caribbean, Black people, the tethers, and we are foundational Black Americans, and that's just what it is. And what I will say is that there's some good points. My major issue and problem is that we do have to be very careful. And as I just heard Baba explain about, we've lost that, man. It's sad that a lot of the generation now don't understand that. They don't understand what Malcolm said, that he's an African who happened to be an American. That wasn't like just trying to play no games or nothing like that. Pan-Africanism and Black nationalism is serious. You know, Dr. Martin Delaney started that, not to play any games. Dr. Martin Delaney started Pan-Africanism and Black nationalism because of the fact that the Europeans had pan-Europeanism, meaning that America started racism and white supremacy. And 1676 is when, the concept of race was established. I'm sorry, I'm talking far. 1676, the concept of race was established in America. And when that concept was established in 1676, they started this pan-Europeanism, that no matter where you came from in America, you came to America, if you was white, then they were all one. Dr. Delaney started pan-Africanism and Black nationalism for the same reason. After the Civil War, he realized that we needed to have some type of similar unification as well. So he's the founding father of Pan-Africanism and Black nationalism. When I say the FBA cult movement, is because of what Tariq Nasheed has done. He's taken the mantle of ADOS under Yvette Carnell, which is American Descendants of Slaves, and just threw FBA on it. And it operates like MAGA in blackface. If it was just delineation, like saying the term African-American, the term Negro, the term colored, and all these other things that we've been called, nobody ever called themselves those terms and start saying, you know, to hell with Africa, and people from Africa are tethers and Caribbean people are tethers, and started this big division and call it delineation. Nobody ever did that. And then to argue the same rhetoric of rabid racist MAGA white supremacists and putting blackface on it, because that's what it does, it's not cool at all. What we have to understand is why even the concept of what we call African, of why, what happened, like, why does that exist for those of us who embrace Black nationalism and Pan-Africanism? And I will say this. The reason why that's embraced the way that it is because Black people in America are still under the colonization of racism and white supremacy in America. In the 1960s, prior to the 1960s, Black people in Jamaica didn't say they was Jamaicans. Bahamas didn't say Bahamians. Trinidadians didn't say Trinidadians. When you study the history, Black people in Jamaica said, we're Ethiopians, we're Abyssinians, didn't say we're Jamaicans. Black people in Bahamas didn't say that either. They said, you know, same thing, identified as Africans, we Africans, Trinidad, we Africans, right? It wasn't until they had a revolution to decolonize. Revolutions ain't always physical either, but they had a political revolution. Then they created their delineation and structure what their lineage was and embraced the term Jamaican. Even when Garvey came to America, he didn't come as a Jamaican. He came as a Black man. Even he used the term Negro, but he came as a Black man. And he came as an African. Didn't come at like that. What happened? Well, in America, we didn't fully win our revolution, political or physical revolution, to overthrow American colonialism. And so we're still colonial subjects. And that's why we identify it. That's why Malcolm said, I'm not an American, I'm an African. Because we're still colonized by the United States of America. And that's why that is. It's not trying to say that, you know, you just deny this or deny that, but that's the real thing. And I'm one who actually traced my lineage in America. My America lineage, I was able to trace back all the way to 1845, actually. And my great-great-great-grandfather traced back there was a Freeman, by the way. And I can trace my whole patriarchal lineage in America back. I got all the way to 1845 and, yes, the 1870 census as well. So my point is that when it comes to that conversation, I can argue it either kind of way. But the point in dealing with that is we have to be careful. Is my point. There's some points you made about there being some distinctions are cool, the people who were here and the people who came after, all that is cool, but it's just got too divisive today at the time that we need unity, and we just got to be careful. And that's my opinion.
Excuse me, brother. Can I retort?
No, well, I'm actually, that's just one thing, and I'm responding.
Well, I mean, since we're on this subject.
I know we were debating, but I'm getting to your next point. Your next point was that the gun culture in America. Well, I grew up in the South. You know, my family is in Florida, Mississippi, Louisiana, so we know all about gun culture. But I'm also, you know, trained in combatives. And my point was that even with hunting culture, you know, you got all kinds of seasons. You got, you know, blacktail, deer season. You know, you could usually hunt, you know, wild hogs all year long and all that other stuff. But the point I want to make deeply and emphatically is that even for the best shooters, there was a certain level of precision there. I mean, if you ever went hunting, you know, a lot of times you're going to fire more than one shot sometimes. You may try to hit, like, you know, a body shot, you know, but and the neck and head is not the easiest shots to make all the time. You know, most of the time when you train, even in combatives, you train center mass shots because the body's easier than hitting in the head. And most firearms training, you start their center mass shots. Even with a double tap, two shots to the body, one to the head. That's how it go, right? That's a double tap, right? Then you got a Sierra. But getting back to the point, well, you do three shots, three and two with the Sierra. But getting back to the point. So I say that because it looks like a certain artistic precision, but anything's possible. I also did say that average people who train, regular people, I did say that, can shoot 200 yards. So that was an anomaly. The anomaly I felt was the artistry, and it was just deep. And that's just my a take and opinion on that. And the last thing about the Holocaust situation, when you really understand how the Holocaust is and was, as far as the Jews in Germany, when it comes to the Jews in Germany, the rich, affluent, Jewish people, we know, had some type of connection and communication with Prescott Bush and these other people in different places. So it's like a part of that actually seemed like it could have been some inside complicit dynamic going on. But the point is that poor, impoverished Jews did get targeted the same way poor, impoverished Black people will get targeted. You have affluent Black people that's complicit with this system. So it ain't no different. We just have to understand that when a group of people are targeted, they're targeted. And that's where I'll land my plane.
He just, you have something to say, then we're going to close out. He?
Yes, sir, Professor. Not too long ago, I heard somebody say something that was very poignant, simple, but it was to the point of the fact that the only true American culture is the ones that the enslaved Africans started to create and passed on and on through us. Everything that they had was stripped. Everything they had culturally was stripped, and what wasn't innate was created here on the land. Nothing came from Europe. Nothing came from Africa, except for them, or any other parts of the world. So other people who have choices, they come and make the choices, and you want to call it divisive, well, then we might not just say forget history. It is what it is. That's the only way we can get over it. Look at it and deal with it directly.
I'm saying, can you explain what you're saying is what it is? Because I don't get what you're saying, so I could be clear.
The facts are the facts. We were stripped of everything. We had no choice in anything. Anybody else who came here had choices. We created the wealth, our forefathers and our ancestors, and we are still the ones targeted not only by the white folks, but by the other ignorant Africans around the world that are coming here who have misinformation, disinformation about us. Let's talk about that. Now, I know that we do the same thing here. We have misconceptions about those people out there. But we have to deal with the truth, bro. Divisive or not, you have to get past the divisive. You got to deal with the truth, get past the divisive, get together, and we'll go from there. I didn't create the education system. I've seen it from when I was a child and what it's developed to. But what we have taken away, we can get again. What we have learned and unlearned, we can learn again. But let's always deal with the truth.
All right. Let me just say this as we close. And Brother Muhammad, we're going to have you back again to go deeper into your perspective.
Yes.
First of all, let's just get this straight. In Germany, those were Germans who said they were Jews. They were white people, fighting white people. I don't understand. People like to treat Jews like they're a race or a nationality. They're just white people. They just follow Judaism, the first testament of the Bible. You understand? That's all they are. They were fighting each other. They fought each other in the Civil War. You understand? They've been both people here, and they fight each other. They fight each other all the time and kill each other. You understand? They're a killing machine. They enjoy killing. All their movies is about killing. You know, they give Academy Awards to gangster movies and things. And all you got is frightening movies. Somebody's chasing them, and they got a hero to save them. I'm just telling you, don't ever, in my opinion, just my perspective of studying, that the thing that the Nazi had in common with the Jews, they were both white. And that's why you have to look at white men. They were Europeans. And I understand the argument, you know, you separate the Jews, like what's going on in Gaza. That's the United States. And a colony of the United States, a military factory in the United States to protect white global interests, trying to exterminating people right now in Gaza. You understand? No news outlet today had the Israelis invading Gaza and bombing it as a lead story. It was all about Robert Redford, about Patel, about everything except for the genocide. Even though the nations did special committee to say it is genocide, and there's a number of other groups that are saying it's genocide, but no one is claiming that Trump is a genocidist. He's the one that's giving them the weapons. That's a violation of the Human Rights Act of 1948 that was passed on human rights, on genocide. I'm just saying that, you know, make it clear. But Brother Muhammad, we'll be back. We generally go, from about 6 to about 6 or 7:15. And it's a little late for brothers in the East Coast and West Coast, and that's where you at. And yeah, we respect that. But me and Rashakir get in contact with you and invite you back to further your perspective, okay?
Definitely. Appreciate you all. You all have a great evening. Y'all okay. Black people. I mean, black powder. People, black power.
And you're welcome to come in and listen on the show all the time, brother. We have guests. We have guests and Rashakir, who's going to be on tomorrow?
Tomorrow? Man, I'm sorry. Tomorrow we have, let me just show you. I can show you better. I can tell you. We got a Professor Akinyele Emoja coming on.
Oh,
he's gonna talk about his book. Let me show everybody.
His new book?
Yes. There it is. The Memoirs of Robert and Mabel Williams, African American Freedom, Armed Resistance, and International Solidarity.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's going to be an outstanding show.
Yeah.
All right there, Brother Fields. I'm glad to hear you still there, brother.
Yeah, that's going to be an outstanding show, as was this one.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
All right.
All right. Appreciate everybody.
Appreciate
each
you
one all. Each one teach one in Conscious Corner.
All right.
All right. Have a great day. Remainder of the day.